Hi, it's Victor Perton, that optimism man here. It's a big welcome to Kevin Novak and Jeff Kerbel.
Hi, everybody.
Hi, everybody. Thanks for having us, Victor.
Oh, it's fantastic. Kevin Novak is the CEO, founder, and chief strategy officer of 2040 Digital. I love that name. And the author of The Truth About Transformation. And as you know, we're passionate about transformation and optimism fueling that transformation. So it's fantastic to have Kevin joining us. And Jeff Kerbel, one of the leading change and transformation executives in Australia and the co-author of the Optimist Checklist for Success in Transformation and Change Projects. Kevin, you're joining us from the United States, but you know the drill. When you visit the Center for Optimism physically or online, we always ask, what makes you optimistic? Is it life experience? Is it faith? Is it mindset? Is it something else that fuels your optimism?
It's mindset. I am at my core an optimistic person, always believing that the future is going to be positive, that we can get through the problems. I'm a problem solver, which we do for all of our clients. And it's important to have that mindset to help guide them through and let them know it's going to be a bit of a bumpy ride, but there is optimism at the end. I'm also a Nichiren Buddhist. Very much believe the Buddhist is inside of you. And if you focus and chant, center yourself, you can see the benefit and positive of things.
I always love, the Dalai Lama, who always says, choose optimism, it feels better.
Yes, it does. Yes, it does.
And Jeff Kerbel, tell us what makes you optimistic.
Well, thanks, Victor. Look, it's a beautiful Friday morning here in Melbourne. And if it wasn't, I keep telling myself that anyway. So that's the optimism coming through. You have to have that in Melbourne. But what makes me optimistic at the moment is there's so many people that are working hard on the big problems of the world and the big problems of our country. With that kind of effort and collectivism shoulder to the grindstone, you can't help but be optimistic that we will continue to solve the problems that we have done as a species for millennia. It doesn't mean it won't be bumpy, and I agree with you, Kevin. There are what we call speed bumps, or in New Zealand we call them jadavars. No one seems to understand that. But yes, they're there, but we always believe we'll get down the road and keep going.
I love that notion. I think we are the descendants of the optimists over a million years, the people who made the decisions to travel, the people who made the decisions to eat the new food, the people who made the decisions to do the interesting stuff, the curious stuff. Now, Kevin, I've read your history and your book. And so could you share with our listeners your life story and the journey that led you to become the CEO, founder, and the chief strategy officer at 2040 Digital?
So by nature, fact that I'm a very optimistic, problem-solving person, always looking for the positive path, that indeed something can get fixed, policies can change, and so forth. And with that core is I'm very entrepreneurial. And so I've had, in what I sometimes joke, a very checkered, waving path to get where I am today, being a chief strategy officer, being a chief digital officer, engaged by inside different organizations. One of the challenges of being entrepreneurial is you are charged with making change, significant change, and you know eventually the culture of the organization is going to retrench and eventually start fighting the change when they feel enough is enough. And pessimism always results from that. And there's a necessity, in essence, to engage the people and in essence, help them, guide them along so they can see the positive outcomes. The challenge in doing that in an organization and some fairly large organizations is you wind up to a point of burnout, and then you start seeing the retrenchment. So after several day jobs, as I call them, A lot of people had encouraged us to start a consultancy and actually do this externally, but internally for organizations. So for the last 10 years, knock on wood, 2040 has existed. And we've worked in 40 organizations so far to date, helping them on a variety of different things when they sought change. And again, positive change to help them grow, help them stabilize, be more valuable to their constituencies, whether customers, subscribers, members, or other. So that is the path. And it's been, you know, wavering, but as I counsel my own children, you can't overplan. You have to be open for where the universe is going to take you, and be open to what it presents you as opportunities to then you can become someone who you never thought you would be at this stage of coming up on 58 next month.
I love that. Again, referring to, given your reference to Buddhism, the Dalai Lama gave us an audience a couple of years ago, and he said the most important thing you can do for a teenager is to foster their optimism. He said, but as we all know, as parents, you can't tell a teenager to be optimistic. We have to model the optimism. And I think for a bloke that doesn't have children, I think the Dalai Lama's got a lot of wisdom on what we do there. So, brilliant. Now, you advocate for staying in the positive lane, and nice coincidence because Jeff's at the National Transport Commission of Australia. So stay in the positive lane and practice honest optimism in the face of conflict. Now, I'm a radical optimist. My gender pronouns are Pollyanna optimist. Tell us, what is being an honest optimist and honest optimism, and why it's essential for navigating successful change and transformation?
Jeff, is that you or me?
Oh, you start.
No, that's you, Kevin. I'm really looking forward to the answer.
I'll throw to Jeff.
I was chuckling to myself about the transportation because of the highways in Melbourne that were under construction when I was just there. So that was quite an adventure.
They're still under construction, Kevin.
So we can be sometimes overly aspirational. And in that of being overly aspirational, we may, in essence, develop something that is unrealistic. So it's important, yes, to be positive and optimist, but also recognizing the mechanics of the situation and being honest with yourself or even as an organization, which is, you know, what we work with primarily, to say what is possible, what resources do you have, what capabilities do you have? So let's then level set. And yes, it's going to be positive, but let's not try to shoot to the moon in that regard. And those opportunities and those kind of discussions, focusing in on that is helping them understand the stages that they have. So if they get to that first step, are successful, then they potentially have new capability or capacity to go to the next step. So there's this honest optimism, but also a realism as part of that to recognize, again, all the mechanics of the situation.
Yeah, that's brilliant. Because we, of course, advocate that optimism is realism. If we go back to that million years of evolution that Jeff talked about, I mean, the advance of mankind during that time has been extraordinary. Let me come to your book, The Truth About Transformation, and it fits in lovely with that notion of honest optimism. So what inspired you to write the book? And what is that clear message? Not just, you know, because you've spread it beyond your clients and the internal work with your clients to inspiring the world with this message.
So it was, I was encouraged, but I was encouraged to write a different book. So my entire career has been in digital, and many organizations, many of my peers who are running organizations would always call me. I need you to explain this to me. Please break this down to something I understand. We now need to do this, or we have this new strategic imperative, or I'm simply just trying to understand how to lead something like this. And in turn, I try to sketch out an outline, taking that inspiration that, wow, someone actually thought I should write all this stuff down. And the more that I played with the outline was my own recognition that the human factors element is the most important. It's not the technology, it's not the mechanics, it's about the people. And bringing that experience to bear across all these organizations at this point, that's what I focused the book on. So I called Deborah, who's on my team, and I said, you know, this isn't work, but will you do this with me? As my editor. And so that's how that was born. And we actually do as well a weekly newsletter. Today was issue 177. It's a long form newsletter, but it is based on raising those thoughts to people as they try to change, transform, even just pivot, or simply just lead or manage an organization that's trying to constantly promote the importance of understanding the people. If you don't have the people on board, if you don't understand how people need to transition themselves as they self-identify in one job, you're asking them to do something else. Well, they need time to re-self-identify, to understand what their value and contribution is in that new role. And there's a lot of leaders who will simply just, we want change and we're going to do this all tomorrow. And in essence, most of that, it all just falls apart because the people are not along the ride with them and understanding what their role is in that process.
Jeff, in the list of the checklist you had, I mean, that was clear, wasn't it? That, you know, it's not just the boss being optimistic and giving the grand speech from the podium, isn't it? That not just the employees, but the stakeholders, Jeff?
Absolutely. I mean, one of the clear things, and I agree with you, Kevin, around transformation, being about the people, and more these days they talk about digital transformation, and no transformation really happens without some sort of technology component. But what's often forgotten or missed is that actually the success of the transformation or the success of any technology is the users and how it's used, and that comes to the people. And as you say, that cultural change in our checklist, it's about engaging stakeholders, it's about engaging leaders, but it's also about engaging followers. And you need to have all three to make a transformation successful. And to your point about honest optimism, and we talk about different flavors of optimism, and I very much subscribe to the realistic optimist moniker, understanding that there are problems, that things aren't always great, but believing that you can work your way through them, I think, is the nature of realistic optimism. You don't deny the challenges, you just work through them and accept them and then move through.
Kevin, a big part of your book is about leadership. And of course, I had an argument with my mother about this for decades, because she would always say, you can't be a leader unless you've got followers. And I would say, no, you have to write. The leader looks like the person in my mirror. So we had this wonderful debate for decades. And I miss her for that reason. She was always a great font of wisdom. So, Kevin, you know, in your book, you talk about leadership. In your newsletters, you talk about leadership. So something more personal, who have been the positive leaders in your life and how have they influenced your approach to leadership and strategy? So for me, I go to my mum, who was a refugee twice and, you know, like you, an entrepreneur. But who were the leaders in your life that have made you the man you are today?
So that is a really interesting question, Victor, because this was a realization of mine probably 10 years ago. So I had a boss who hired me into an executive position earlier in my career. And there was a lot that she kept advising, trying to guide me. And I was like, you know, that's not me. What are you trying to do? And she seen something in me that I didn't at that point in my life. And then working with her for 5 years as my boss, there was a realization I had a few years ago where I'm like, I'm sounding like her, right? There are things that I am, you know, somehow, and then I actually, it caught me and I pondered that and I'm like, I always looked up to her, but I never realized the influence that she had until in many ways I started parroting that. So there are people like her who seen something and was able to curate what she's seen. And that's what I try to do with my team. That's what we try to even do with the younger staff that we may work with in different clients, where you look for that potential, you feel that potential, and you try to coach and grow that. I actually was doing that with a recent grad from University of Maryland, who just started for this client. Very nervous, very on site, but every opportunity over 4 days on site was coaching him, and how to approach things and how to look at things. And so yeah, you then find yourself teaching in those ways too. And I value her. And there's another person that also was a boss for a point of time that seen something and decided to coach and guide me forward. So that really, and I teach at UMD myself, and that is very fulfilling, except when you're having to grade 30 some papers, like I do this afternoon. But I do, I'm always looking for those moments to convey, right? And convey that those opportunities and to really help people along.
And so I love the storytelling. We have two of our advisory board members. One is John Hagel, who ran the Deloitte Center for the Edge and wrote that brilliant book, The Power of Pull. And he's very strong on narrative. And then we've got Sean Callahan, who is the master of corporate storytelling. So there's always a bit of a tension there, you know, which is more important, the narrative or the storyteller. In your book and in your writings, you really explore the connection between optimism, you know, that ability to persist through difficulties, and organizational storytelling. Do you want to emphasize that, the importance of that storytelling?
Yeah, because it, Victor, leads to shared purpose. And that's something that I continue to beat the drum on. And Jeff, that's to your point, where everybody does need to be involved and not necessarily bought into it, but in essence, understanding what everybody's moving forward with. And obviously in this country now, we have some issues with that coming forward politically. But it's critically important to, in essence, and again, back to honest optimism, it's not to be overly aspirational, but it's in what direction are we moving as we go through those bumps. And the organization can be very honest with itself and telling that story to say, well, we have come from here. That was not necessarily positive, but we understood what the problems were. We solved those problems and we are on a positive path. And it's not a spin, because weirdly, I was just talking with this one board about the storytelling this morning. And I said that weaving the story together is critical. And it's not just critical internally for the organizations, but it's external. If people understand your story, if your constituents, your members, your customers are seeing the totality of the story, or the story and how it connects to different parts, you know, it's interesting. From a marketing and communication perspective, the assumption that everybody just wants bullets, and because of social media, and yes, attention spans are decreasing, but ultimately people are still looking for meaning. Tell me the story so that I can align with you. Are you someone that I can align with? And so that's the criticality. I know here in the U.S., the whole corporate responsibility element with that narrative and storytelling is majorly in flux. But it is, what do you stand for? And from a community perspective, are you one that I need to align to or want to align to? And that then does lead to, hey, we're part of this community. We're all moving forward together. And that, in essence, leads to an optimistic viewpoint in the present and the future.
Victor Perton here, that optimism man. Look, this is just the most wonderful, wonderful conversation. Kevin Novak, the CEO, founder, and chief strategy officer of 2040 Digital, and Jeff Kerbel, one of the leading transformation experts in Australia. Jeff, can I throw to you?
Yeah, I really love that that you're writing a long form newsletter, Kevin. And you're right. It is a sort of a generation and a period where execution and going forward fast is really seems to be the imperative. But you know, you can go forward fast and fall. And I think one of the things about understanding what you're doing is important, and you can't transform with a headline. And I think the ability for people to really not just see, or leaders in particular, not to think that they can provide a snapshot or a headline and that'll get people behind it, but to go a bit deeper and get people to really understand the why, I think is really important. And storytelling's massive in that. And I really like the description you provided. Is there really a specific example of an organization where you've really felt like the storytelling really sparked them up and fueled the optimism?
Interesting. Well, across clients, yes. And we spend our time with a lot of association societies, and particularly in the medical space. And so in reframing the story in one organization that was medically focused, and this is actually a passion area of mine too, that if we can get the right education and information in the hands of a practitioner, we are ultimately saving somebody's life. And they had lost that. And so we, in essence, helped guide them back to what they lost, and to, in essence, generate some passion that ultimately you don't know this, but you can have some confidence that by virtue of what you're doing, you are moving, or you're moving that needle, and you are perhaps saving someone's life. So without
Yeah, that's naming... fantastic, actually. Yeah, no, that's great, because just yesterday I was having a conversation with a leader in change and transformation, and she was sort of describing that often they tell their team, you know, they're a provider of software to organizations, and that she was telling her team, hey, let's have fun, we're not saving lives here. And actually I like the spin you put on that if you're working in healthcare in any way, shape or form, potentially you are saving lives, and whether it's in the back end of technology or so on, that's fantastic. And healthcare is a nice segue, because I really wanted to understand in terms of innovation, healthcare is a field where innovation is going forwards, both in terms of the actual operations or you know the medical procedures, but also in drugs and treatments like that. So, how do you see optimism, and sort of stepping from that, how do you see optimism influencing innovation?
It allows them to see the possibilities. So, and I'll use, so building on healthcare. So a client that I spend a lot of time with is parenteral drug association. So any medication that's not taken orally, and these are great microbiologists, biologists, manufacturing engineers, so forth and so on. And they are all incredibly passionate about the possibilities with RNA vaccines and a variety of different things, and are working diligently to find manufacturing, well, really development, but also manufacturing capability to do that, meet the public. Their whole mission is that our outcome is the patients if we do this well. So they, by nature, are an optimistic bunch. They're seeing the possibilities. They're not getting frustrated when manufacturing fails, because they're like, okay, we're going to go back, we're going to fix that, and we're going to move forward. And you know, healthcare is one of the most important things for all of us, right? As we get older, particularly, and finding new treatments, whether it's an RNA vaccine for pancreatic cancer or so forth, those things are significant. And so that passion infuses that optimism that they will indeed solve that problem and figure things out.
But I challenge both of you. I think the science says that a pessimist can't innovate. They are so ground down in what went wrong and blaming themselves. And I often in my speeches, I give the example of Dyson, the vacuum cleaner guy. 5,000 iterations of the bagless vacuum cleaner, 15 years of failure and try again. Now, of course, he's a billionaire now and he's got 3 innovation centers around the world, but it's that notion, you've got to be an optimist to innovate.
Yeah. Well, Victor, we wrote this week in our newsletter about responders or solvers. And we were recognizing that you need to respond in certain situations and those people are needed. But in some experiences, that it was interesting to see there wasn't the solvers. to say, okay, you know, we're handling this in the immediate, but are there things that we need to come up here and really think about? What was the catalyst for this? And then how do we get to the best outcomes and ensure this doesn't happen again? And so that complete problem solving element in approach is sometimes missing. And that's like the Dyson guy, right? I screwed up and I'm going to continue over and over again to do this until I get it right. Or not to be pessimistic, but, you know, reach the end of your path and still not do it. But at least you're always propelling yourself forward and continuing to try. And I, by nature, because I'm like that, yeah, I kick myself sometimes saying you are getting older. You don't have the energy that you had when you're 30, but I keep pretending that I do. because I always believe that I can, or that is possible. And I just need to continue to do X, Y, or Z to move that along and get there.
I'm a 5 o'clock in the morning person. I get that drive at 5 in the morning, but I do find I do need that 2 o'clock nap. Having spent time in Mexico and South America, I think there is great wisdom in the thousands of years of the afternoon nap.
Yes.
Refuel yourself with a coffee and then you can keep going. So Jeff and I and a few other people looked at the Optimist Checklist for Success in Transformation. And Jeff, do you want to just remind us, what are the key points?
Yeah, look, the key points are... start with a really compelling, positive vision of the future. I think you cannot, and it does speak a little bit to narrative, but the analogy I've used, and people have done this, is if you're asking people to walk down a dark tunnel, you won't get many takers. But if you turn on the lights and you see your vision of something really positive at the other end, they'll go through, you know, sprinting. So I think that certainly the very first step is have a vision and an objective. You need to know what you're trying to aim for, and so does everybody else that's going with you on that journey. And to your point, Kevin, you know, the tech translator is kind of the tagline I use on my my LinkedIn profile, and I've been doing similar to you, where you're asked to say, "What the hell does this mean? Can you translate this?" And it's usually from business people of technologists. To be fair,
yes. Jeff, I always there is my ChatGPT.
Yeah, that's right. I have. To be fair, that's sort of a trait that's recognised, but there's some inherent things that give us strengths in one area that might leave blind spots in the other. So, you know, I like doing that as well. So I definitely resonated with that. But I think once you've done that, you know, it's really making sure that you've got the leaders of your change right, that they are, and to Victor's point, it doesn't mean that they're leaders in title, but they're people that can lead, that understand what you're trying to achieve, and they can lead it and they can influence others, and really, because they're the ones that are going to persist. They're the ones that are going to ignite the fire again when it gets damped down a little bit. So I think you really need those leaders. And then, of course, then it's what I mentioned earlier about the broader stakeholder group, including everybody else, and understanding and being realistic, as you say, having the truth about, you know, not everybody is going to be, you know, rapidly behind it, but that at least if they understand it and they understand why you're doing it, and sort of you've got to, they can understand the reasons, you can help them through that process, or they can choose not to be part of that process. And that's a legitimate outcome too. I think that's often missed, is that people may choose not to be part of that future, and it's important to respect that, and you can help them in that way as well. You know, don't sort of say, if you're not on board, then we're throwing you off. you know, it's about saying, okay, well, you know, that's a legitimate choice. We understand it, and we'll assist you in any way we can to move on, whichever you're going. So those are, I guess, some of the key pieces that at the front. We go through things, normal things like scope and your processes and resourcing. But really, I think that making sure you've got that foundation right, so you can maintain momentum through any troubles and challenges, I think those are key points.
Kevin, I've taught a number of women entrepreneurs in the Pacific Island states a concept I call magnetic optimism. So it's an optimism so tangible, a vision so compelling that people want to reach out and touch it. So if I pick up then from Jeff, that vision stuff, Kevin, how do you generate those visions in these clients of yours? You know, I always think of Teddy Kennedy's eulogy to Robert Kennedy. You know, some men see things as they are and ask why, but he dreamt things that have never been and asked why not.
So to Jeff's point about finding those advocates in the organization, and we typically approach that and we interview pretty much everybody, at least at certain levels, and we actually do go way down to really identify what their pain points are, what their thoughts are, and synergize that back, because it's one thing to reflect something that they actually do feel, maybe been afraid to voice, versus us coming in and saying, this is what the vision needs to look like. And back to that point on some realism, they need to find themselves in that. And so there's some facilitation there. Again, we're not trying to drive, we're trying to guide and facilitate them to what they are actually going to form around. And again, it's not the trying to be over aspirational, right? It's trying to recognize the realism in everything, but then what the possibilities are. And to Jeff's point, I mean, when you do that and you start to see those advocates raise their hands, then that is where you start seeing that cut, not cut across the organization, but sort of infuse the organization towards that new purpose.
Absolutely brilliant. Now, I recognize it's late. It's evening for you. And of course, Jeff and I are in morning.
You're time. All caffeined up.
The world will never end. It's always tomorrow in Australia. So you've got kids. We've got kids. We have people work with us. What advice do you give someone looking to adopt more optimism in their daily life, in their work, and in their life of transformation?
So, Victor, you really hit on it earlier about the teenagers, right? And trying to have them be optimistic. And I suggest that the Gen Zers and the latter generation Alpha are weirdly more pessimistic.
Mm.
And so there needs to be a lot of coaching when you're working with a young workforce. And obviously they don't have our experience in life, right? Our acceptance or our the way we now can deal with problems versus what we may have done 50 years ago. So it's helping and coaching them in that regard to think differently. And the challenge in that regard, and we've dealt with this, is with climate change and the financial systems, they are coming at a different base of possibility than what we were. And that base is much lower. So it takes a little bit more effort to get them to think differently and move them up to the point where they can be optimistic. It's been interesting and it's been challenging, to be honest with you. Concerning as well.
It's actually, it's a brilliant perception. I mean, the OECD, you know, the Organization of Economic Development, which is the 20 leading countries, they actually say the problem is so severe, we should be teaching optimism explicitly in the schools. And it's not. I mean, if you look at the English curriculum in Australia, it's full of dystopia and misery and anxiety and fear, and it's almost unrelenting. And Patrick McGorry, who runs one of the leading teenage mental health organisations in Australia, said to me, Victor, you must find it bizarre. You know, your grandfather was executed, your grandmother to the gulag, your parents refos, and I'm telling you, that is him, that our teenagers of today are the most anxious generation ever. So I love that notion of yours, which is, we've just got to continuously coach them. Or in your Buddhist hat, as the Dalai Lama would say, we've got to model it.
Yes, we do. Yes.
And I think to add to that, Kevin, I think the opposite of my statement earlier about headlines, I think that we live in a headline generation. So one of the things I think, that to your point, to finish off with the storytelling, is if we've got positive headlines to draw in the younger people, and then we follow it up with all of the good longer form sort of writing and storytelling that that goes to why they should be positive. I think that's something we can do as a society and as leaders. You know, really give the positive headlines and draw them in, and then give them all the reasons why. You know, the world is a much better place now. Sure, there's lots of things that we need to challenge, and there's a big challenge in climate change. But again, if we don't focus on solving it, to your point, we're responders rather than solvers. And you know, we need the solvers to really kick into gear. And I think optimistic storytelling is it.
And Jeff, we wrote a piece, I want to say six or more months now, of where has our optimism gone? And we focused that in on, yes, the political dissension here, and we try to stay away from that. But it was important because, to your point, when you're barraged with that negativity constantly throughout the day, you it's like you become what you eat, as you become what you see, hear, and read. And it was, in essence, putting forward that we do need to separate ourselves a bit from that, or else we are right back down in that negativity, because, again, that's all we're getting over and over and over again. It's a challenge. I think it's a challenge for any of us, and particularly here right now, and just not to get political, but seeing the debate, right? Mm-hmm. Complete entrenchment negativity versus trying to move forward, and regardless of, you know, voting, it was just that was a very interesting contrast of where everybody is at this point.
Kevin, my 17-year-old daughter and I just did a road trip from Toronto to New York, and then we flew to the east at the west coast, and she gave a presentation to her politics class. She said all the elites that we had dinner with, you know, the people, you know, the billionaires and the millionaires, they were all pro Biden, as it was then, not before Harris came into the field. And our taxi drivers and bartenders and waiters were all pro-Trump. So it was the most remarkable insights as we traveled across America. But the nice thing was everyone was congenial about it. You know, the young woman wearing the Trump T-shirt in Syracuse. And I had the conversation with her. And of course, I did ask her the tough question, why does he support Russia so much? And she did look a little bit bewildered on how to answer that one. But what I love about America is, you know, when you read the newspapers, it's doom and gloom about the country. But when you meet the real people on the ground, optimism is the lifeblood of America, isn't it?
It is. It is. And it's wavering right now. Hopefully we get it back. It's a great observation from your trip, because generally we are a very optimistic population.
We love American optimism. It fuels the world. And when I'm in Silicon Valley, you just sort of walk a meter taller, you know, just because everyone opens with something like, what's been the best thing in your day, rather than, you know, something miserable. But Kevin, you have been fantastic. This has been such a joy. And Jeff, to have you join in with your wisdom and optimism as well. So on behalf of all of our listeners, Kevin, thank you, thank you, thank you. This has been wonderful.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks, Kevin. Thanks, Victor. Great chat, Kevin.